Translation: the Lord's glorious acts and his acceptance of various transcendental forms for the performance of extraordinary pastimes in the mortal world are very difficult for anyone other than his devotees to understand. And for the beasts, they are simply a mental disturbance. Please repeat. The Lord's glorious acts.
The Lord's glorious acts.
And his acceptance of various transcendental forms.
And his acceptance of various transcendental forms.
For the performance of extraordinary pastimes.
For the performance of extraordinary pastimes.
In the mortal world.
In the mortal
world.
Are very difficult for anyone.
Other than his devotees.
To understand. And for the beasts. They are simply a mental disturbance.
Okay, Maharaj. I think we have everything ready here. You'd like to continue?
You're getting pretty fast with this power control here.
You know, well, there is a delay. I can tell you probably get it about 3 or 4 seconds after I click the button. But
yeah.
I'm not sleeping. I'm just, it's a delay.
No, I know. I also run these things, too. I know they have down below you can click lecture and it turns everybody else on and off like that. So, but let's go back to the translation there. Slide number 4. Yeah. Okay, so in our Bhakti Bhai Bhava study, which is I'm on a tour. We came to the Bay Area, San Francisco, on up to Boise, big Rath Yatra, and so many people came there, devotees. And now Wednesday we came here to Seattle, like that, and so on. And then we'll finish off here, then go back to Tennessee, then down to the symposium and education symposium in Houston. Okay. So we're having our Bhakti Bhai Bhava program, and as we're doing that, one of our members of our group, about 5 people, our disciple Srinivas, he actually was studying Sanskrit at Gopi Puranadana's school in Vrindavan. He took time off from work for Micron, and the school closed for various reasons. It's very interesting. It's higher education, higher study in ISKCON. So he came back. But he was reading different commentaries along with the verses when we're studying them in our Bhakti Bhai Bhava program. And he said he finally was coming to the conclusion that Prabhupada bases his translations on Sridhar Swami's commentaries, and he bases his purports on Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary, who's kind of coming to him. So when we were there these last few days in Boise, Radhika Raman was there, brought his whole family, everything else. And so we had very, very nice, very excited, all of us discussing our different angles. And when this point came up, he said, yes, yes, definitely, very much true. Because what they've done, the first thing they did is he and Krishna Kshetra did a collection of articles from different modern people about Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of them, for example, is about what's happening with the different Goswami traditions and the different pundit traditions in Vrindavan. And how they study Bhagavatam, how they become Bhagavatam reciters. And very interesting. And they're not slack people. They do a lot of work. You know? So anyway, that's there. And that book has got on to one of the top review journals in the United States as being one of the best books, in this area like that. So it's coming out, and that means every library will buy it. And then professors will start using it in courses related to this. So that's one very, very big a wonderful result in this preaching area. And the second one, then, they had a contract then with, I think it's Columbia University Press, because they wanted them, because they said, okay, you're producing this book for us, but then a lot of people are going to want to know what is the Bhagavatam. So do you think that you and Kenneth, or Chris, etc., could then do a summary of the Bhagavad Purana with crucial extracts, picking out crucial verses and stuff and doing those in detail? And of course, they said yes. We could do that, like that. We would die to do it. We'd sacrifice our left arms to do it. Yeah, we can do it. But give us a good contract, pay us well. Yeah. So he said it was so much work, you know. And in the beginning, they were afraid that they would have to, like, you know, compromise, you know, Prabhupada's translations and everything else. It's going to be a challenge for, you know, we'll sound like blind faith people and so on. But he said the actual result was, the first result was that in doing it like this, that they saw that Prabhupada was so strict in parampara. Everybody researches according to their own lines. But they saw that Prabhupada, in terms of the previous commentaries, everybody else, he was so strict, you know, in just following the previous commentaries. Okay. And the second thing they saw was that the commentaries that where it says something, you know, he's a devotee or this or that, it seems like a devotional twist. It's not. You know, the acharyas are taking what is usually the first, you know, definition of the word from the Amarakosh or the Nirukti or something, these standard definitions. And then the other commentaries, which are more impersonal or something, those usually are the second definition. Then you got third and fourth, like that, and so on. Those two things kind of very much stood out and gave them great confidence that in the first place, what we're getting from Prabhupada is what the acharyas have given. And the second place is our scholar acharyas are giving what the Vedas give. And the other interpretations are actually, you know, not really the actual commentary. The Vedas are pretty much clearly personal. You know, clearly personal, like that, so on. Okay. So next point then is that these translations are, they're not just translations, but if you look at it here, it says the Lord's glorious acts and his acceptance of various transcendental forms. So we had the acceptance of transcendental forms in the word by word, but there was no mention, I don't think, of glorious acts. But that probably is probably from the previous text, like that, and so on. So sometimes when Prabhupada's translating, he's including, you know, just the idea as it's flowing, like that and so on, which is quite natural. Okay, and in the mortal world, okay. So you see, a lot of things actually are actually interpretations, you know, from the actual text, like that. And probably again, it's not Prabhupada doing it; it's Sridhar Swami. If Sridhar Swami again, his commentaries, the ones that Prabhupada's following. For the translations, and then Vishnu Chakravarti and others, and for the Jiva Goswami and so on, within the purports. Okay, another point. He says of all the commentaries, Sridhar Swami's commentary is the most like this simple. You know, he kind of takes the things as they are and presents them, and doesn't get into a lot of like, you know, speculation, bona fide speculation. Because there's some things that are unclear, you know, in different ways like that. But then Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti, they get into more esoteric things like that and so on. Madhva Acharya came before Sridhar Swami. And he also has his commentary on the Bhagavatam. And so, but why do we say then that the oldest commentary is by Sridhar Swami? Like that. And also very, very, very erudite, very clear, very, very qualified. The Sridhar Swami's commentary is very, just like it is. It's like Lord Chaitanya says, it's a gigantic work, you know, very respectable by anybody like that. So then the reason that Madhvacharya is not considered a commentary is because he just picks out specific verses and things like that and presents his ideas like that, the essence of it, so on. So it's not a full commentary like that. So there's one result, you know, a nice exciting result from this discussion. But then if we go ahead to the next slide, number five. Yeah. And of course, in general, we have, am I still connected? Yeah, I'm still connected, okay. Yeah, okay, there it is, okay. So one point in general, of course, this is the sages of Naimisharanya, in the first two cantos, they hear about Brahma's darshan of Mahavishnu Loka. And then at the end of the second canto, they want to hear about, you know, what Krishna told Uddhava and Maitreya, which, of course, was brought out in the conversation to Maitreya and Madhura. Because, you know, they think he talked about something more confidential. And he did, because Uddhava asked him for more confidential knowledge. And so he asked him about his param stiti. Param stiti, his situation. So then Krishna explained his actual pastimes and activities, which, because in Mahavishnu Loka, it's describing some things there. There's like palaces and the Lakshmis and so on. But then these are kind of in some ways very formal. You know? So he explained to Uddhava his position in Dwarka, maybe even Vrindavan, I don't know. You know? So anyway, that's what they wanted to hear about. So then the first four chapters of this canto are basically how Vidura met Maitreya. And of course he met him, because first he met Uddhava, and Uddhava sent him there. You know? So we've heard all about that. His first questions are, how's my family? How's your family? The Kurus, the Yadus. He knows a lot of this already, but you want to hear it again. It's so traumatic. So he hears it, and very beautiful descriptions, wonderful description of Vrindavan. All basically, the Uddhava's remembrances are like a wonderful little Krishna book, and a wonderful thing just to present separately, or somebody should do it into a nice movie. Uddhava's remembrances of Vrindavan and outside of Vrindavan, it would be a wonderful little movie like that and so on. Fantastic. Even like with this, maybe this with slides and stuff. You know? Okay. Then of course, it comes into the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Krishna and how he was empowered then to go and spread this message like that. So finally, it's finishing off here, and this is the next to the last verse. The next verse is very short purport. I don't know if you're even going to do it. But it's saying that all these pastimes we're talking about are very incomprehensible like that, you know. So then Prabhupada's talking about this point about understanding these pastimes and who can understand them. Okay, so the purport, Prabhupada says, the transcendental forms and pastimes of the Lord, as described in Bhagavad Gita, are difficult subject matters for those who are not devotees to understand. And I'm a little surprised by that, because why didn't Prabhupada say as described in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam? You know? And that's because Bhagavad Gita doesn't describe too many pastimes among wielders of weapon. I am Rama. Okay. Yeah. But mostly it's describing Krishna as the Paramatma, Krishna as the cause of all causes. You know? And so Prabhupada's focusing us here. We're not talking so much about these other Leela avatars and programs like that, but we're just talking about Krishna as a person to the level of Mahavishnu and so on, which for most people is a big surprise. So in these first cantos, we're still at a very simple level. We're still now, actually we've gone from Krishna's lotus feet, and now we're up to his thighs, like that. Yeah. The Lord, Prabhupada says, never reveals himself to persons like the jnanis or the yogis. Aha. And there are others who, because of their envying the Lord from the bottom of their hearts, are classified amongst the beasts. Okay. So here we get to this particular topic. Let me close the door here. 1 second. Okay. Yeah. Very nice. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So now we get to this topic of pasunam, all the beasts. Yeah. And Prabhupada will pretty much stick with that. So it's even seeming like what is it that whoever's talking at this point is also getting a little bit like passionate or irritated themselves, you know? Because they're obviously talking about the beasts aren't so much like dogs and cats and, you know, and gophers and snails and donkeys are not so much bewildered by the Lord's pastimes of incarnation, because they're bewildered just by human beings or something, or to speak of anything else. So it seems like, yeah, the whole thing is here that whoever's speaking is becoming a little bit disgusted and just right out saying, you know, yeah. And there are others who, because of their envying the Lord from the bottom of their hearts, are classified amongst the beasts. And for such envious beasts, the subject matter of the Lord's appearance and disappearance is simply a mental disturbance. So we got them on board now, these envious beasts. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:15, the miscreants who are simply concerned with material enjoyments, okay, I think I fall in that category, who work very hard like beasts of burden, okay, I do that, can hardly know the personality of Godhead at any stage due to asarika bhava, or a spirit of revolt against the Supreme Lord. Okay. And the sidebar here, then we have Bhagavad Gita 7:15. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, Naradama, and who are the lowest, oh yeah, what is it, Mudha, and who are the lowest amongst mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Namam duskritano mudha, prapajante naradamaha, maya parita jnana, asuram bhavam ashutaha. And of course, this is actually a big topic in Isopanishad. Our Bhakti Baibab, our Bhakti Shastri class is right now on that topic. And you see, very strong. This is one of the most principal verses in our structure, this verse, like that, 7:15. And they say they have the Asuric Bhava, this spirit of revolting against the Lord, like that. And so they don't even like speculate or even get like a hint, you might say. But the jnanis and the yogis, they might appreciate the form of the Lord in some perspective. You might think, well, maybe there is a form, this and that, you know, or something. But he's probably saying here that those who are envious of the Lord and hate him, then the Krishna's form is simply a disturbance for them, like that, an irritation. Okay, slide number, whatever we're doing here, 6. Prabhupada continues, the transcendental bodily expansions manifested by the Lord for his pastimes in the mortal world and the appearance and disappearance of such transcendental expansions are difficult subject matters. And those who are not devotees are advised not to discuss the Lord's appearance and disappearance, lest they commit further offenses at the lotus feet of the Lord. The Prabhupada says they're advised not to read Srimad Bhagavatam. Keep your nose out of it. Because they simply present it in such a way that it's just disgusting, it's disturbing. It's like, you know, they present Radha and Krishna pastimes, or even Sita Ram, in like a very, you know, degraded fashion. Okay? The Prabhupada continues, the more they discuss the transcendental appearance and disappearance of the Lord in the Asuric spirit, the more they enter the darkest region of hell, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 16:20. And 16:20 is Asurim Yonim Apana. Okay, I'm going to postpone my Bible upgrade here. Asurim Yonim Apana Muda Janmani Janmi Mam Apraptyaiva Kontaya Tato Yanti Adamam Gatim. Attaining repeated birth amongst the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. And it's very nice because you're reading two books at the same time, because again, this is so much like the Isopanishad. You know, they depart for the darkest regions of hell, like that and so on. And these are actually the Veda, Vata, Ratas, people that know the Vedas, but then pretty much even intentionally distort them, and by that for the purpose of animating the common people to do sinful activities far more than they normally would do. So normally, people engage in illicit sexual relations, okay, but then these Vedavata Ratas, they begin to study, you know, the Vedas, they begin to study material nature, they develop science, and then they develop, you know, Viagra. You know, so you can have illicit sexual relations 10 times longer. And they develop birth control pills, and they develop, you know, so many processes like that. So these ordinary people, you know, the Isopanishad says, stupidity is bad, but worse than that is cultivation of the material nature, you know, from an asuric position like that. You know? So this is the Maya Vedavata Ratas, and Prabhupada saying he actually makes a distinction in there between the Maya, what's it called, the Maya Prakritis, again, the other guys we have, the Veda Bhata Ratas, Namam Duskritana Muha Papajante Narayama, Maya Pavita Jnanas. And I think he says the Maya Pavita Jnanas declare themselves to be God, whereas the Veda Bhata Ratas simply declare themselves to be the knowers of the Vedas, like that. So different levels like that. So in any case, they look very respectable. They know the Vedas. They keep themselves clean. They have many ways like that. But then here, our acharyas are just calling them beasts. Beasts. And so it's a good lesson. We're learning today. I remember one time I went to a discussion in the Graduate Theological Union at this right next to the University of California in Berkeley. It was a nice topic on something, Indian philosophy. I sat there, and there were maybe like about 10 people kind of in the audience, maybe about 8 people together on stage, like discussing it, learning professors. And right during the program, they were serving out wine to the learned professors. So who drinks wine? It makes you bestial, so on. Okay, so they're advised just to not discuss this thing. Go discuss, discuss the basic principles of the Upanishads. And discuss the basic principles of austerity, and yama and niyama. Otherwise, as Upanishad says, and it says here in Bhagavad Gita, they're going to take repeated birth, mudha jamani jamani, like that. Okay, slide number 7, leaving the donkeys behind. Okay. And Prabhupada finishes off. Anyone who is against the transcendental loving service of the Lord is more or less a beastly creature. Yeah? As confirmed in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. So very much think it's focused on the beastly word here. We have a nice donkey here. It doesn't look too bad. Yeah? So I get going on and on. We hear the scriptures. We try to preach. We go back and forth. And I know sometimes we're dealing with these academic people, and sometimes they're innocent. They're not really demoniac, you know. Or else usually it's a combination, like all of us. They have some of their ignorance is out of ignorance. Some of their ignorance is out of innocence. And some of their ignorance is out of a desire, like all of us, not to know. Because if we know, we have to surrender, you know. And so when we're dealing with them, it's just like I can see it takes so much energy. You know, because you can't say the wrong thing. You've got to put things in a certain way so it doesn't create like some conflict, and get the message across in such a way. And they're making progress, you know. So it's like when you're dealing with animals and so on, with claws, fangs, and horns, they can put you to death at any moment. So you've got to make sure the fence is there, the rope is attached, make sure you're able to hop out of the way and stuff like that and so on. You know, so it takes a lot of energy. Dealing with these people because they have that beastly tendency, you know, and they can become angry. And even though you're cultivating a friendly relationship for many years, and it's a couple loose words, and woof, can do so much damage to those relationships and so on. You know? So be very careful because the beasts are stupid. They take intoxication. Like all the beasts like to be intoxicated. And beyond that, they're so self-centered that in the end, they're really very much focused on themselves, even to the extent of sacrificing members of their own species like that for their own interests, what to speak of other species. Pridayananda Maharaj gives us an example that if I go in front of a bunch of zebras, a big herd of zebras in India, in Africa, and I go up and I start killing a human being or beating him, and some human being is yelling and screaming. Yeah, the zebras will look up and then they'll go back to eating their grass. You know? And they'll say, okay, they'll say, no skin off my nose. No skin off my nose. But if I take one zebra over there and start beating a zebra and he's screaming, all the rest of the zebras will just flip out like that. Yeah. But in the end, beast means that even he'll sacrifice his own family and own people like that for his own body. And he likes to be intoxicated. He'll seek out intoxicating things like that. The other side, of course, is this violence that they can retort to bodily violence so easily. Okay, so for them, the pastimes of the Lord are just a mental disturbance. Okay, next slide here. We have our kids next door outside the window there. Maybe what I'll do is I'll close the window here. Okay. 1 second. I'm now standing up. I'm walking over to the window. I'm closing the window. Yes. I have 3 kids there. You've got a whole construction program going on. It looks like plastic buckets and piles of dirt. Okay. So we'll leave the young children there with their instructions. Meanwhile, back at the, So looking this up here, I was reading the whole, you know, perspective on this, and I came across 3:23. We're on 3:24, but in 3:23, it's almost the same topic. Every living entity is controlled by a supernatural force, and thus his sense enjoyment is also under the control of that supernatural force. No one, therefore, can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities, but one who has become a devotee of the Lord by rendering devotional service. If, of course, the only real dira is going to be a devotee, because he's the only person who actually can be free, you know, from these influences. You know? So Prabhupada is explaining the purport, very nice, very parallel. You can actually read the purport there. You know? Maybe you could do that. But one of the points Prabhupada makes is that everybody in the material world is really, you know, here because they want to experience their rasa, you know, with their senses. You know, they want to serve the senses through the mind, and because of that, then we experience our constitutional position as servant. But now we serve the senses, and we feel some kind of like maybe superiority or control like that, some perverted, very perverted control. Okay. But so for them, because they're so much absorbed in matter, they can't imagine that the Lord's sense gratification is independent of the material nature like that. And so therefore they can't put their faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental activities. Well, okay, if you're describing the activities of God, you know, or the transcendence, you know, then they're going to be also in the material world because of this and that. You know, one Sikh fellow one time, I was talking about how Guru Nanak accepts Krishna as an avatar. They said, yes, but he had trouble with the gopis and he fell down. He had some problem with the gopis and he fell down. You know, so many sensuous activities and so much sensual enjoyment. So therefore they can't put their faith in Krishna's sensuous activities or identify him as being a transcendental person.
Okay.
Then, of course, within that text, it also mentions Bhagavad Gita 4:9. And of course, this is the same thing, the simple text here. Jan makarma chame devyam evam yo veti tatvataha tatchakta mam evam ye prapajante mayam evam tarantite. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities is not upon leaving the body take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So the word, of course, is repeated again and again. Veti tatvataha. We actually asked Radhika what the word tatva means. I forget his definition, but it's kind of a general thing about truth, perspective, activity like that. So veti tatvataha. Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yaj ganam agvayam brahmati paramatmati bhagavan iti sabdate. It means those who really know. It's like a very clear, you know, clear thing. It's very difficult to disturb it. You know? For those who really know, you know in truth, Prabhupada says, you know, my janma karma divyam, they're liberated. You know? So Prabhupada's saying it doesn't take, you know, another birth, you know? Doesn't take more purificatory activities in the future. It's right now. But if we know this, you know. And he says in that sense, the word tatvam asi actually applies. You know? Once we understand that our nature is the same as Krishna's nature, then we are liberated, but we never become God. Okay, yeah. We have the same nature. So once we can really to understand his transcendental pastimes in the material world, then we, of course, obviously have to understand our transcendental pastimes in the material world. Okay. This is kind of the basic, like, perspective that we got out of the verse like that. You know, probably focusing on the guys who don't understand all this, because they're like beasts. You know? But finally, then he, and in the perspective like that, too, he's talking about it before, too. And this is what the whole thing is, the Vidura, and wants to understand it. Because he's Dira, He's not being influenced by the modes of material nature so much, but the mode of ignorance, right, that passion. You know? Then he's already on a transcendental level, and so then he can understand these pastimes, and he can be very effective then at purification, at feeding the soul. And the soul gets this food, you know, from hearing these pastimes, and when it has nourishment, of course, it becomes stronger, and then it can relate to Krishna, you know, from spiritual perspective. And even if we're in the material world, that's the whole point, that we can serve Krishna effectively if our soul is strong like that. You know? But in the process, of course, as we're going up like that, appreciating the form of the Lord, maybe then we'll appreciate the form of demigods, Gandharvas, fairies. And there are groups like that. There are different people. You meet them, not a lot, of course, but you actually meet people who really have, you know, some appreciation for these subtle forms. And they manifest it through different things like music, you know, and dance and art and stuff. This is what this Carl Jung work is teaching us, taking us into a pretty substantial community of people who aren't on the gross platform like that. And they demonstrate it by demonstrating it's on the gross platform. Jung's experience was with his techniques of introspection and meditation. And he had all these kind of out-of-the-body type perspectives on things. But then almost all the things he published were really to try and bring it down to a logical level so it could be understood by as a science. At that time, science was developing. When he was doing it, science was not what it is now. It was developing. So he also thought that psychology could also be a science. You know? So, but what he was experiencing was something which was, you know, at a different level. And he appreciated it. But it had to be brought back from this meditation level to the, you know, Gyan level, to the Gyan level. So all the books he was publishing were like that, you know, for that perspective. So ourselves, as we're developing, we're meeting people in our own development, we're chanting, yeah, we should come to this celestial type level where we're experiencing subtle aspects of Krishna consciousness, but then to go on and actually appreciate that the deities, you know, Radha, Shyamasundara, and Vrindavan, actually see them and actually appreciate their transcendental nature, actually see their pastimes and so on. Yeah, that's, you know, more subtle level too. And the same difficulties, like I was mentioning, I see the same difficulties in my character that Prabhupada was describing, the bestial people and so on. Yeah. But as soon as we get a little bit of advancement and stuff like that, you know, and we can get some perspective in the Bhagavatam and everything else, then our medicine and our purification can really accelerate. So in some ways at this point it's a matter of that we're on the right path, we're making progress, we have a good experience of the goal. Time to time we get causeless mercy. Every now and then the path goes over the top of a hill and we see it in the distance there, and then we go back into the valley, okay. Yeah. But we understand from the general perspective we're going the right direction. We've got a good map, we see why the pathway has to turn to the south here, like that. So at this point I would say our thing is we're on the path. But the thing is, how is to improve our journey, you know? Maybe there's more than one path. Okay, we're on a footpath, but if you go up a little bit higher, you can catch a bus. Oh, okay. And the bus is faster. Okay, then you got to go 3,000 miles. Okay, so we're going from Los Angeles to New York. Okay, let's take the bus to an airplane terminal. Yeah. So that's what my idea is. We also have to make our own progress and keeping me disturbed by the form of the Lord. Oh, Prabhu, can you come over for lunch? Well, Prabhu, I'm sorry I can't come. I have to do the Arctic. Nothing. Get to do the Arctic. For Prabhu. Oh, I have to. Prabhu, I can't come. I have to dress the deities tonight. Yeah. So simply for our beastly mentality, these things are still a disturbance. Okay. That's our humble, what's the word, diatribe. So any comments, questions, complaints?
Maharaj, I had two comments and one question. I was going to say that I thought it was very nice how you explained that Srila Prabhupada took his translations from Sridhar Swami and then his purports basically from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami. I'd never heard that before. That's amazing. And then I think you mentioned the Nirukti Dictionary, was that? that the words are taken from the first definitions of the Nirukti Dictionary. Anyway, I thought that was very nice. Oops, I'm sorry. You know what I did?
Okay.
Yeah, anyway. But there's at least, I think, three dictionaries. There's the Nirukti, the Amarakosh, and there's another one like that, which are accepted as authoritative, you know, by different scholars using this stuff. They've been for thousands of years.
I was going to give a personal example how when you were speaking of how you know, people that are just like animals are speculative, they just cannot understand Krishna's pastimes. When I first became a devotee, one of my siblings, as soon as they understood, you know, that I was interested in a Hindu religion, boy, they just really discouraged me. Like, how in the world, of all religions in the world, why would you be interested in Hinduism? It's so weird. And then Krishna, yeah, we learned about something at the Bhagavad Gita, you know, he's a chariot driver, and, you know, there's just so lack of any kind of understanding. First of all, that God can do anything, you know, they don't believe that. And then as far as God's seemingly ordinary activities, you know, as a chariot driver, they don't accept that. So, yeah, for the non-devotees, it just like Prabhupada said in the translation, that it's nothing but a disturbance to their mind. You know, they just cringe hearing about Krishna because they can't understand at all.
Simply beastly.
I did have a question for you.
My beastly brother.
If you don't mind me asking a question that's not on the subject matter, it's just that yesterday I was muted on your conference, and I couldn't unmute myself. So can I ask in regards to...
No, please go ahead. Yeah, we're struggling with our Yusuf Upanishad thing.
Okay. Well, this was from the...
Do you know how to unmute yourself on the phone? You start meeting?
Yeah, it's star 6, but you had muted in such a way that nobody could unmute themselves.
No, because that opened my finger register now. Okay. So good to know that, because when you do that on the web page as the controller, I guess it does it permanently. But when you do it on the star 5, then everybody else can do it voluntarily. Okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
Well, I was just going to ask, you had made the point that Radhakund is so sacred that even elevated souls like Narada and Sanat Kumar cannot take their bath. So my question is, how is it possible that ordinary people can take their bath in Radhakund?
That's what it says in the purport. Even the great sages and so on, so that you can't get to take their bath there. What to speak of ordinary devotees engaged in the practice of, you know, of providing bhakti and so on. It's that verse, you know, it goes, karma bhya parito hare yataya bhakti jajur jnani vimukti bhakti parama primayikanistastata. It's describing different levels like that, you know. So yeah, even those kind of devotees like us who are engaged in Vaidhi Bhakti, see, yeah, we can't, you know, take that. But the Radhakund is talking about there is the original Radhakund, the one where there's swans floating in the water and pink clouds above, and the shores are made of diamond sand. Okay, so we're taking bath, and the same way we're cooking for Krishna, we're dressing Krishna on the altar. Yeah, we are, but at the same time, too, we're not dressing Radha and Krishna, you know, in the original form.
Oh, okay. I understand. Okay.
Ah, I hope so.
Is anyone else?
Somewhere in the dog, in the silence, the dog howled. If you want to, then we can look at the one more purport there. And if you go back to what is it? It's Srimad Bhagavatam 3:23. Okay. And the purport's very nice. That's the one where I said it's like this one chapter ago. I'm probably talking the same point. Every living entity is controlled by a supernatural force, and thus his sense enjoyment is also under the control of that supernatural force. No one, therefore, can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities, but one who has become a devotee of the Lord by rendering devotional service. See what devotee of the Lord here is. Controls, okay, so on. Vishram Beta Yogeshwaram. Actually, it's Yogena Yogeshwaram. Yogi can put his faith in it like that. Okay. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, no one can understand the transcendental birth and activities of the Lord. The same fact is herein corroborated. No one but one who is enlightened by devotional service of the Lord can understand the difference between the Lord's activities and those of others who are controlled by supernatural force. The sense enjoyment for all animals, men, and demigods within the purview of the material universe is controlled by the supernatural force called the Prakriti, okay, or Daivi Maya. No one is independent in obtaining sense enjoyment. And everyone in this material world is after sense enjoyment. Persons who are themselves under the control of supernatural power cannot believe that Lord Krishna is not under any control beyond himself in the matter of sense enjoyment. They cannot understand that his senses are transcendental. In the Brahma Samhita, the Lord's senses are described as omnipotent, i.e., with any sense he can perform the activities of any other senses. One who has limited senses cannot believe that the Lord can eat by his transcendental power of hearing and can perform the act of sex simply by seeing. The controlled living entity cannot even dream of such sense activities in his conditional life. But simply by the activities of bhakti yoga, he can understand that the Lord and his activities are always transcendental. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, bhakti mam abhijanati yavan yas chasmitatpataha. One cannot know even a fraction of the activities of the Lord if he is not a pure devotee. Yeah. So very much nice, same thing. And Prabhupada's amplifying it a little bit. Then, of course, also Bhagavad Gita 4.9, we mentioned that. One who knows John Makarma Chame Divyam Evam Yobaya Takvataha. And the purport, Prabhupada says, the Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the sixth verse of the fourth chapter. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage. Yeah? And therefore, he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present material body. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. So I'm always thinking devotional service is easy. Yeah, okay. The impersonalists and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. Even then, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahmajyoti of the Lord, is only partial. And there is a risk of returning to this material world. If a devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body, and does not run the risk of returning to this material world. In the Brahma Samhita 5.33, it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations. Advaitam, Achutam, Anadim, Anantarupam. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this faith fact with conviction. So we have Utsahan Nishchayad Daryat. And Pabadishi translates the word Nishchayad as conviction. One has to understand this fact, with conviction. Although it is incomprehensible to scholars and empiric philosophers. As stated in the Vedas, Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, Eko Devo Nitya Lilanurakta, Bhaktya Vyapi Hridi Antaratma.
The one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationships with his unalloyed devotees. Okay. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas, yeah, and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yeah, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculation, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. So we have to accept it on the authority of Scripture, yeah, and of Krishna's personal presentation. So Lord Chaitanya's potency. You know, except because Lord Chaitanya says Harinama, Harinama, he's quoting it. He's Lord Chaitanya. And of course that comes through Prabhupada. Yeah. Yeah. We don't waste and spend time on speculation. Simply by accepting the truth on faith. Of course, blind faith is condemned, 434. But because we have knowledge, okay, and we're being faithful to that knowledge, you know, then we can accept Lord Chaitanya, we can understand this truth. Yeah. One can, without a doubt, attain liberation. Of course, in liberated state, then we can really experience it. We can really hear Prabhupada's translation. We can hear his Maha Mantra and experience it then at a level which is beyond all this mental activity whatsoever. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme Lord, who says unto the Lord, you are the same Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead, is certainly liberated instantly. And consequently, he enters into the transcendental association. And consequently, his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. Yeah. So again, we become liberated, and it's a very nice kind of liberation because there's a personal conception. But then that liberated state, we have to experience Krishna's qualities and then get finally purified. So kind of like Baba, our comprehension. In other words, such a faithful devotee of the Lord attains perfection. This is confirmed in the following Vedic assertion. Tamevam viditvati mrityum eti nanya panta vidyate yanaya. One can attain the perfect stage of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. Svetashvatara Upanishad 3.8. That there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance. And consequently, he will not attain salvation simply, so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey, or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Yeah. So, of course, in our preaching, we're up against this kind of people, again, either innocent or else demoniac, but they have very prominent positions in society. Such puffed-up mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotee of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge. In this way, attain perfection. You know, with faith and knowledge. You know, devotion and knowledge. Okay. So the same theme being repeated from all these different directions like that. And of course, how can we apply it in our own lives and stuff like that and so on. So any kind of final comments, questions here?
Hari Bol, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hari Bol. So there was one question regarding Radha Kund. I know it's written that many times the Goswamis, when they would write, any glorification, sometimes they would use what is called different kinds of alankar. And some kinds of alankar, like Uddhata alankar, is like a hyperbole, like they will say something to glorify a certain place by making a comparison to something similar to even Arda and Sanat Kumar could not bathe in this Radhakund with the speak of ordinary devotees. So some of it is written as alankar to glorify the nature of Radha Kund. Because Radha Kund has, like Krishna's Leela itself, two features. One is Ardojamayi and one is Madhojamayi. So that, what you described, which was beautiful, and I'm going to have to put that in my repertoire preaching now, that Madhojamayi Radha Kund, where there are crystal bridges and so forth, like described in Krishna Bhavanamrita, Govinda Leelamrita, This is Madhujamai Radhakund, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his Adoja Leela, his magnificent Leela, he also manifested through Goswami, especially Raghunath Das Goswami, Radhakund as we see it in Vrindavan now. So when devotees go to Radhakund now, not that they're bathing, as you said, in that Madhujamai Radhakund, but they're bathing in Mahaprabhu's mercy and mercy of their guru, in our case, Srila Prabhupada, they're bathing in that kripa in order to obtain that original Radhakund.
Yeah. I agree completely. Yes. It's interesting, too, because the subtle... It's interesting because when it's translated in Spanish, they don't translate it with that comprehension. It says in the earlier verse that Lord Chaitanya was looking for Radhakund, and he saw these two little, what do they call it? It's like the water was like a little shallow.
Ponds.
Not even really ponds, even.
Yeah, you're right.
So he was sitting there in the middle of the field bathing himself in this stuff, and people wonder why this sannyasi is doing this. Then Prabhupada says, and then he's told his followers that, since Spanish it says, then he told his followers that these are the original Radhakund and Shyamakund. But in English it says, then he told his followers that the original Radhakund and Shyamakund were there, like that, were situated there. So it's a subtle difference, is that they're there, but this is not, what you're saying, it's just like, exactly, you're very nice, It's like somebody comes out of the jungle and says, I want music. Okay, fella. and he goes back with a CD to the jungle and says, I bring you music. we're getting close, Don't scratch it. Don't mess it up. If you know what you're doing, then eventually, So be very good here. Be very nice. And I remember one time we were in Bhakti Stupa Brahmana Maharaj's little mandir he took over there. And it's right next to, you can see Radhakund right out of it. And it's very old, indeed. And one devotee from New York, I forgot his name, he was a famous kirtan leader, he was leading. I think the five of us were just chanting for maybe like 2 hours next to Radhakund. And for one moment, it was like, one little drop of water, one little splash of the gopis and Krishna playing, came all the way down from Radhakund to Dwarka, to Mahavishnu Loka, to Mahar Loka, to Indra Loka, and hit me on the head there somehow. And just for one moment, there was just so much happiness and everything. That's what I think. If we get that close every now and again, we may get a drop of that on our head, and then we get, faith in the transcendental pastimes like that. Wow. Thank you. Okay, so I guess we'll go ahead here and continue on. We have we're giving a Nectar of Devotion seminar here on the southern part, on Baba Bhakti. It's kind of like our Bhakti by Baba program. And a lot of devotees are ready for this. I mean, they've taken Bhakti Shastri, and now they're ready for to going on to this, more details about Baba Bhakti. And we're also including it right into modern theater with Konstantin Stanislavski and Viola Spolin, because it makes a very nice contrast in how they're dealing with the modern theater and their comprehension. They have very, very sophisticated comprehensions. But when you see them in contrast to Rupa Goswami's description of the theater, art, and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and you can see, things we can take advantage of and things where they have maturities, they might mature like that. Okay, so thank you so much. I always really appreciate the association.
I was just going to say, yesterday I tuned into Maharaj's Bhakti Shastri course, and it was really nice. I don't know how much time people have, but boy, that was really enlivening. So maybe is it okay if we post the time and all the information on our site, Maharaj, if anybody wants to attend?
I guess so. What happens is that I think it's limited to 50 people, but we get 50 people. We're doing good, but honestly, I have to say that probably you're like somebody who sees people's bad qualities as good qualities. So maybe some people will realize the true nature. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Jai.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh.
Very nice.